right, so the first figure is 20 houses.
Okay. Suppose what the book of someone is the big process, how it converts with the political process. Most people think, it was alluded to earlier on, that the Loyalist Parliament is called the ceasefire of the police generated. That would be very much the truth. As the leader of both the Ulster Volunteer Force and the Commando while I was in prison, from about 83 up until about 88, I have been told all sorts of diplomats from around the Commonwealth. And certainly have been in discussions with people from Whitehall about how we could move the situation forward on the outside. As everybody will know, those periods were littered with violence from both Republicans and Loyalists. Jackie will probably speak more around the peace process and calling the ceasefire. Jackie was one of the main people and actually bring that about and achieve that. But from my point of view, I think that there's a notion about that Loyalists never wanted peace and that they weren't involved in any peace process. As I said, for me, it started back in 1983 and at that particular time, in 1983. And in the 80s, there was a conduit between the UKF and the IRA, certainly. That was going on by a Church of Ireland minister and a Catholic priest, both called Murphy, and being nicknamed by me as a Smurf. And they were sort of going back and forward, and stories, or passing on narratives. So the process has been long and hard, and anybody who's read Tony's book will know that in 1973, the UVF met with the IRA in Dundalk, and again the IRA refused the ceasefire that was on the table, the UVF called the ceasefire. I think it also people forget that there was a ceasefire by Loyalists in 1991. Again, Jaggy would have been heavily involved in that. And the process didn't break down on the basis that the IRA started attacking housing estates and carrying out sectarian murders and planting bombs. It was brought down on the basis that the constitutional parties couldn't get agreement around the table. And at that stage, I know that both the leadership of the UDA and the UDF and Red Hon had agreed that if they were going to call another ceasefire, what they needed was some sort of political representation. And obviously, at that particular time, it was the UDP and the PUP who were asked to prepare. The ceasefire was followed 3 years later. So there's been a big contribution from Loyalists, which hasn't been recognised. There was very little academically about it. We have to search hard until now, until Tony's book, which I think has acted as the lid of the jigsaw. And those who read it will then go off and find the rest of the jigsaw and put together. But I know early days, I think, that certainly Loyalists have realised that there were a number of things that they needed to do. In 1981, and I'm sure Jackie will talk about this, but I'm going to talk about the PUP and the UVF, but as well as that, there was definitely a positive contribution that came from Jackie's instances in the shape of John McMichael and others, through similar documents to ourselves. So, in terms of everybody talks about the class of 77 in the maize, which was Colin Mitchell, myself, David Irvine, Gusty Spence, and a number of other people. And around that, we've been looking at how we could help people on the outside. And I think the formation of the PUP gave us that opportunity to be involved in trying to, I suppose, in many ways, make policy. And also, we actually looked at how the conflict was handled. And I think that our document, Shared Responsibility, which has been involved there, this is for people to read, had actually outlined a number of things that need to happen. And most of them, not them all, but most of them ended up in the Good Friday Agreement. From that point of view, I think that Loyalists have made a positive contribution. I also think that when we think about and read the Loyalist ceasefire, the quest of the statement actually said about all those innocent victims and actually talked about abject and true remorse. And I think that was something that hadn't been said by anybody, and I don't think it's been said since by any other part of the group. What it was said that combined was Nobody Command, which represented the organisation that talked about UDA, UFF, was the volunteer force in Real Hunt. I think in many ways, during that process, we got a number of guarantees. We had guarantees from those people who were in government and in opposition in Dublin. We'd also got a number of guarantees from both the Tories and Labour. And we also had guarantees from what we would describe as Irish America in terms of they believed in a peace process. They also believed that they needed to be careful not to spin this on its head and to come out as cheerleaders for the IRA, that they needed to be cheerleaders for peace. And all of those things happened. And I think that right up until the agreement was actually, it was never signed, by the way, but people said, I was a signature to it, but wasn't. We never said it. That's a bit of a myth. We all signed the document, and then people went on the internet, put them on the internet, became available, and actually sold it for massive amounts of money. I just actually found out last week a French guy put three on just my signature on, he got 200 quid for it. So I didn't actually send some, put them up because the party needs some money. But, all you're going to say, hey, the process in many ways brought loyalists to the table. Loyalists also contributed both in the shape of the UDP and the PUP very positively. My understanding was, and I can speak to the PUP, the support came from the military organisations that we were trying to give political confidence to, and I believe it was the two sets of organisations that actually agreed to this. So from my point of view, the problem isn't with the peace process or with the Good Friday Agreement. The problem is with those people who are in government and have decided that they're not interested in the peace process. What they're interested in doing is not having a shared future, but sharing it out. And, if anybody wants proof of that, look at the Strategic Investment Fund that was out, the baby of both Peter and Martin. It's another disgrace. And what they would have been better doing was sending £10 to everybody who voted for them, because there'd be more benefit in doing that than rather than trying to put money into communities for all their own reasons. I also think that this relationship, whatever it is, between Martin and Peter doesn't actually work in the positive, it works in the negative all the time. And it's about sharing it out, but it's also about blocking so that people can't move. And what they end up with is a stalemate. Then what we get is we get deals around education, which is affecting Protestants, because the PDP are a middle class party and so they also use, and they refuse to recognise that inner city loyalists and who go to primary schools are not getting the proper education. Whether that is because the Ulster Unionists threw us all out under the Morton Plan in the 60s. They sent us to Craigavon, Lisburn, Carrick, and everywhere else. And then those companies that they sent us out to work for all folded. And what it ended up was you ended up with people stuck out there and they can't get back. They moved 50,000 out of the Shankill alone. And the aging population, that population with no skills. And then they refused to take any responsibility for it. In terms of the education, they have supported this notion of selection at the age of 11 when they know it doesn't work. They won't even listen or won't actually go and examine the guy who actually introduced the 11 plus. He introduced it at 11, not on any scientific notion, he just picked 11. Now, we all know that whenever children go to school, selection happens at the age of 14 because that's when they're asked to pick their subjects that they're going to do for to get a job, and still feel they ignore all of this. The other thing I think about the peace process was that we've had a number of attempts by people who describe themselves as constitutional unionists and constitutional parties, to try and bring about a political process that had never happened. And the reason that never happened was that they never had any confidence in working together. It only came about after the campaign was maybe come on by the ceasefire, and then they started to get confident and started to talk. And that was the reason why we have a political process. Now, some people may not like to hear that, but it's a fact. And go back over it and see what happened. You know, the reason why we didn't have an administration in 74 was because paramilitaries said it was the politicians to block it. In 78, when Paisley asked for another workers' strike, it didn't happen. Why? Because the paramilitaries didn't support it. You know. And I can recall whenever we were announcing to people we were going to call the ceasefire, I said, don't be doing that. You know, you need to keep killing people. And these were from some constitutional politicians. We didn't want to see ceasefires. And the reason why I didn't want to see them was because a lot of the paramilitaries became the holy men. They wanted to talk to the British government. They said, well, if you don't deal with us, the bogeymen will come in. You know, and that's the reality. Now, we talk about the flag protests, we talk about everything else. The difficulty with all of that is that once you teach your children to be afraid of the dark, they remain afraid of the dark until somebody shows them that there's nothing there. And that's what we're living in, this society. We're living in a society where people have used and abused people in terms of saying that you can't move forward because of X, that you can't move forward because of Y. And, you know, when people are sitting in government with Sinn Féin, and Sinn Féin are sitting in government with them, and Sinn Féin can then do political agitation on the streets right across Northern Ireland, then they expect people to respect them. You know, we can respect people who make the right decisions in government, or we can respect people who respect the peace process, but whenever they start to attack others and become part of the criminalisation policy, then that's when this gets dangerous and difficult. In terms of loyalists, you know, from my point of view, I can recall having a major row with the British Labour Party whenever Tony Blair told the world that he was going to look after Republicans and Sinn Féin, and the Chief Constable were going to look after loyalists. What sort of statement is that about a set of people? Because we don't even know what the term loyalist means. I know what it means for the BBC and UTV. It means it's a derogatory term, that everybody's a criminal. I can recall going to City Hall one day in the car, 2 minutes. Just to tell you a story, I was going to the car in City Hall, and the headline on the billboard was Hutchison charged with sexual assault. It wasn't me, but it said loyalist politician. It was a DUP man, Paul Hutchison. But the headlines didn't say that. So they had an article in Telegraph. The second one was, David Irvine rang me another day and said, where have you been at? I said, why? He says, somebody just rang me and said, a loyalist politician charged with assault and police officer. It was David Tweed, DUP councillor in Balmoy. Now, this is how the media manipulate and do all these things. There weren't loyalist councillors, there were DUP councillors. And the only people at that time could have been described as loyalist councillors was ourselves and the UDP. And that's the sort of thing that goes on. Let me, just to finish, what I want to say is the loyalist contribution has been great. There is no argument about what's in TFA, and there's no argument about supremacy. What there is an argument about is human rights. I came back in 2011 to take leadership of this party because for 4 years previous to it, I was treated like a second-class citizen and a criminal. I think I had 2 parking tickets and 3 speeding fines since I was released as a life sentence prisoner in 1980. Now, if people want to say that that's criminal, go ahead, but I haven't been involved in any other criminal activity. The Sunday Word accused me of being involved in criminal activity and I took it to court and won the case. Unfortunately, not many people know it, and why do not know it? Because on the same day, George Best's sister took an English paper to court because it said she was an alcoholic when she wasn't, and her case overshadowed mine, which was quite glad about because a lot of people have taught me that I don't know how to get home. So from that point of view, what I'm saying is we don't know what the description of the allowance is, Joe, and we don't know what the description of the work class fraud is, because if we use the BBC website, some of us will not be in there. But let me be very clear. I'm totally behind the peace process, and I support the notion that politics is the way forward. And I've been saying since December and before that unless we have something like an absolute commission that goes back into our communities and stops talking to the great and good, but tries to find out what people living in the deprived areas feel a shared future would look like, then we're going to go nowhere. Because I think that we need to go back. We need to test this out. It's not about saying that these people have a veto over the politics and the government. It's not about that. But it is about testing out where our two communities are at. And I think that needs to be done. And, you know, the last thing is that I think that what I want to be clear about is that I can support the GFA that I signed up to, but I can't support the GFA as it's administered by Peter and Martin, because it discriminates against me. It doesn't allow me to have my full say. And I have to say that what I get sickened about is around decommissioning and everything else. Our people have done all they've been asked to do. And so have Republicans in many ways. But the difficulty is, the bigger your mandate, then anything that's going on in Sinn Féin or the IRA is hidden because they've got a savable mandate. But I also know that there are Republicans out there who are disaffected and not involved in violence, but have a different view from Sinn Féin, and we can't hear them. And the reason why we can't hear them is Peter and Martin. Will that let them be heard, or will they let the likes of me or my party be heard? But be very clear, we support the peace process 150%, but we also believe that what was designed for the run of this country 15 years ago no longer works. Not because of what's happening on the streets, but because we created sectarian institutions to allow nationalists to feel good. Nationalists should be safe now. This is not about majority rule. It's about how we move forward. And in our view, we need to review that document and work out how we move forward, not only with consensus, but with some form of opposition, which will drive people and push people into making the right decisions for this society based on economic drivers and other things, like not just based on what party or what trade you come from.
Okay, well, thanks.